Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Greater is the one who's living inside of me than he who's living in the world. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Hour 2 of Live the Promise. Just had a fabulous conversation with Brady Boyd. He's been on the show a handful of times before. He's got a new book that I would love for you to check out, especially as we exit 2014 and enter 2015. The title is Addicted to Busy, Recovery for the Rushed Soul. He had so many one-liners that Grace couldn't keep up with him with tweets. She's like, we need a transcript of this whole show because he had so many things to say. That really stop you in your tracks and make you think about what drives you, why you rush the way that you do. If you missed first hour, catch the podcast on our website, myfaithradio.com. Now we're switching gears. We're going to talk about finding God in those places of heartbreak and disappointment in our life, because they can actually inspire a hunger to know him more if we allow them to, and we can actually experience God in a more profound way. Excited in a moment to talk with Sarah Haggerty about her book, Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, Tasting the Goodness of God in All Things. And we're going to get her on in just a moment, but first, just quick announcement. Faith Radio is partnering again with Angel Tree Ministries this year, this Christmas, to bring the gospel to children with a parent in prison. And only $84 will help reach six kids with a Christmas gift, with the gospel, and a message of love from their incarcerated parent. And so our goal is to reach 1,000 children. We're a little better than halfway there. I've only got about a week and a half left, so we sure would love to hear from you. You can get more information on our website at myfaithradio.com. So let's listen to a quick story of someone who is actually really touched by the program.
Christina doesn't remember a time when her father wasn't in prison.
My name is Christina Allen. I'm 24 years old. My father was incarcerated when I was 3 years old for murder, burglary, and arson. And he's not scheduled to get out of prison until 2038.
But Christina did have someone she could count on. A mother who kept the family together and even organized anxious trips to the prison for a little girl to see her daddy.
The times going in to the prison, my focus was more so on going to visit daddy, more so than the strip search and everything else that encompasses those visits, because it's daddy, and no matter what, little girls love their fathers.
Daddy was someone Christina visited twice a year. Mommy was the consistent presence in her life, until just after Christina's 12th birthday.
I didn't realize how big of an impact my father's incarceration played until I was 12 years old and my mom passed away.
Now alone, Christina's thoughts turned to her father in prison.
Because I didn't have him there, I began to build up a lot of hatred in my heart towards him.
As a young teenager, Christina was looking for something, anything she could count on. That first Christmas after her mother died, there was a knock on the door, and she realized there was something that had been consistent for just about all her life. Angel Tree. Prison fellowship had not missed a single year.
It made me feel special inside. Every year, he would send me a gift through Angel Tree, and it's something I grew to expect every Christmas.
Because she had not been forgotten by Angel Tree, Christina realized she had not been forgotten by God.
I realized that God had never turned his back on me. He was always there to keep me safe from harm. I had to give him back the only thing that I had that was worthy, and that was my life.
What has God done with that surrendered life? Christina earned an MBA by age 22. With her husband, she launched an Angel Tree outreach at their university and their home church. But part of her will always be an Angel Tree kid. She still cherishes her favorite Angel Tree gift, a jewelry box from her dad.
I began to hold items that were near and dear to my heart inside of it. I kept the ID card, that I took with me when I visited my dad. I also kept jewelry that my mom gave me before she passed away. To me, it was always a box that I could go to for small but great memories of my mom and my dad. Although they were gone, they still lived in my heart.
For hurting children across America, Angel Tree Gifts confirm they are not forgotten. This Christmas, would you help a boy or girl like Christina know there is hope and a future?
You know, I think that's why Jesus says, remember those who are in prison, because they're at such a place of brokenness. And remember their kids. Oh, wow. What an amazing ministry. If you need more information, go to our website, myfaithradio.com. So let me tell you about my second hour guest, and we'll get her on the show. Sarah Haggerty is a blogger whose website, Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, serves as a place to process and encourage others, honoring her story and theirs. And when not writing, she's spending time with her hubby, Nate, or chasing after five constantly moving children. She's an avid reader and early morning runner. She relishes any opportunity to see a sunset from a beach. Sarah, Nate, and their kids, Lily, Hope, Eden, and Caleb, and baby Boaz, make their home in Missouri. She's got an influencer page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Sarah, so nice to meet you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Susie.
Well, you're a beautiful writer, so I'm excited to talk about your book. And we Yes, absolutely. We love to start our conversations talking scripture. And you chose Proverbs 27:7, a satisfied soul loathes the honeycomb, but to a hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. Talk about that verse and even when it first came to life for you.
Well, I was in my 20s, and I remember actually exactly where I was at my kitchen table when I read it for the first time. We were several years into marriage and just were experiencing some hardship in our marriage and had learned that we also were going to have struggles conceiving. My husband's business had taken a turn for the worse. I mean, it really felt like it was sort of this convergence of all things hard in our life. And I read this verse, and it was truly an aha moment for me when I realized that what the circumstances in my life that were serving to make me bitter and hardened, I was becoming hardened even in ways that I hadn't noticed but just sort of subtly allowed, were actually an opportunity to grow in hunger for God. And this verse became sort of a game changer for me, because as I read it, I thought, I am hungry. I didn't call this hunger. I was actually more frustrated with my circumstances, but really underneath it all, it was hunger that was being unearthed for God. And in this hunger, I could find him in new ways.
And that, to me, is such a revelation, the way you unpack that, Sarah, because it's so true. If we frame our disappointments in a way where all we can see is loss and not potential or invitation, we can miss the potential there. And somehow it's like you sensed an invitation to look up, and God met you there. And there's so much to your story that I can't wait to talk with you about. If you don't mind, Sarah, go back a little bit. Give us some backstory in your faith journey, how you came to Christ, when you found yourself being all in, and how that all came about.
Sure. I came to know God at a Young Life camp when I was 15. And it was, I love the ministry of Young Life. I actually then went on staff later in life for Young Life. And I, over time, and it grew in my relationship with God, began to just sort of believe that life and God meant bigger and better. And this was not necessarily anything anyone told me. I think just in the back of my mind, I started to think, well, you grow in God, and it's like a treadmill. You just turn the treadmill up higher, you run harder, you develop stronger muscles, you have more of an impact for God. And as time went on, I started to realize, goodness, I'm sharing the gospel with teenagers all over the place. I'm seeing hearts change, and yet these words are starting to feel hollow for me. This God that I'm talking about feels like just words and not something that's actually touching me in a very real way. And so shortly after I got married, I came face to face with this kind of just this bone dry experience that I was having on the inside. And I just said, God, there has to be more of you. If there's more of you, would you show me? My husband also prayed that same prayer in the same month. And we didn't realize until later that we both were praying those prayers independently. And shortly thereafter, that's when we started to see some of the circumstances in our life unravel. And I didn't realize until years later that really that was God's beautiful hand in my life, answering the cry that I had for more of him and letting some of the externals that I had put so much stake in be thwarted and stalled out so that I could find him on the inside.
Mm. And, you know, we just spent the last hour, Sarah, talking about this addicted to busy and how Brady Boyd said, you know, that there are more workaholics in the church than alcoholics, and that that kills us more, you know, more often than not, because it's all in the name of ministry. And we are sincere and we're running hard and racing hard. But as he was saying, and you said in your book, it's just not sustainable. And the point isn't that we run like slaves and run hard. We are sons and daughters. And to live out of that place is a whole different motivation, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think God, in his merciful way, doesn't necessarily lead us there by putting those words on a paper, though they are in his word. I think in his merciful way, he lets us live that. Yeah. He lets us live out even the full extent of what it means to just run hard for him, and then get really hungry and really tired and really dry. And then he meets us there.
And it takes a certain freedom, because those who are still running and maybe it's working for them might misinterpret your pause and your rest, right?
Oh, for sure. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I would have. I look at myself, I think, gosh, what would my 23-year-old self, how would my 23-year-old self evaluate me now? And she would have a lot of things to say to me about how I should be living my life.
Okay, give me a couple. You're sitting across the table from young Sarah Hagerty. What do you say to her?
If I was 23 saying to the now Sarah Hagerty, I would probably have a lot of words for her about how she should be working harder, about her outward impact, about the way that God has designed us to influence the earth. And I think those things are really true. But the 37-year-old version of Sarah Hagerty would say to the 23-year-old version of Sarah Hagerty, there's a beauty of God waiting to be unfolded on the inside. When no one is looking, when the doors are shut, and when your external life isn't producing the kind of fruit that you think it should, God can produce a harvest on the inside of you.
Mm. So good. I love the picture of that. Well, we do need to take a quick short break here. When we come back, I want to have you tell the story that you opened the book with about arriving at a baby shower that you attended for a close friend, and just some thoughts that went through your mind. And Sarah dealt with some infertility and some disappointments and how God met her in that place. Don't go away. More with Sarah Hagerty in just a moment.
My bittersweet moments is just spending time with aging parents and watching the suffering that comes with that, and experiencing moments of joy and laughter, but places of weeping when you see parents that you have known to be strong and capable struggling. And so again, just God is sufficient to provide for each needs and provide grace and compassion for every turn. And Christmas season points to the hope of a Savior in his death and resurrection, which points to the hope of our future. And this is not it. It's not the end.
This is not it. And you know what? Jesus meets us in the little nooks and crannies of this life. And if we think it's always bigger, better, produce more, we miss that he is in that place, and you're caring for your aging parent, or you're in your bedroom crying out to him for a breakthrough, for that desire of your heart. He's with you there. Talking to Sarah Hagerty, she's got a great book titled Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, Tasting the Goodness of God in All Things. And I want to give Sarah as much time as possible, but I do have a few copies I could get in your hands. If you want to chime into the conversation, ask a question, here's the number, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email Susie at myfaithradio.com. So, Sarah, before the break, I asked you about the story that you opened the book with when you're at a friend's baby shower. Talk about what that was like for you. Give us a little context of why it was difficult.
Yes. Well, going to baby showers, period, was hard for me because it was like staring in the face the reminder that other people had what I wanted. You know, it would be so awesome to walk through pain in a silo where we just didn't have to face other people having what we want and cannot get. But baby showers were just that reminder to me. But this particular friend was a dear enough friend that I really felt like I needed to go. And when I got there, it wasn't too long after we were there that women just started, as they so naturally do at baby showers, sharing stories of labor and delivery And it was a small enough shower that as these women shared, and I'm sinking into my chair, I'm also feeling this wrestle of like, oh, I hope no one notices me here because this is an awful moment for my heart. Mm-hmm. I am just reminded that they have what I want and I can't get it. And yet at the same time going, would someone please notice my pain? You know, this is so painful for me. And what do I do with this pain? And as I left, I did leave early. And as I left and drove home, I just realized I was faced again with this opportunity. You know, I could escape and run and harden and just let myself feel kind of a bitterness that would just cloak my real emotions, or I could crack open before God and say, God, this hurts and I'm bleeding. Would you come and hold my tears in your hand right now? Would you come and let me see your nearness? Because this ache is very big.
How did he meet you in that place? When did you first start to sense him? Because as I'm hearing you, just my own, you know, mama's heart for you, I can only imagine his father heart for you in that cry of your heart. I mean,
yes.
When did you start to feel a sense of, oh, dear, you are mine and I'm with you in this?
I think it was when I started allowing myself to be vulnerable before him.
Mm.
You know, when life works for us and we're having success, we don't necessarily need to be vulnerable before God. But I think there's something that uniquely happens when we don't get what we want, or when our circumstances don't work out like we expect them to, or we're kind of forced into the waiting room for a prolonged period, that allows us an opportunity to be vulnerable and to be weak before him. You know, we're always weak before him, but I think sometimes when our circumstances reveal that, we get a chance to cry before God and to let him hear our cries, let our cries come before him. And I think it was when I started to just have that emotional integrity, to be honest before God, that I started to see, oh my goodness, I never knew he was a God that was near to the brokenhearted, because I'd never let myself feel brokenhearted before.
Yeah. Wow. So good. Here's a quote from your book. In times like this of losing myself in comparison, I didn't see God as a belligerent father refusing the simple natural request of his daughter. He wasn't stern and angry with me, leading me out with punishment. He wasn't even absent, his mind caught up in more important matters. My question was not, is God good? But instead, is he good to me? If the mother whose womb had been opened was living her reward, what had the barren one done to deserve such a vacancy? What did you learn about yourself and about God in the midst of that? Because so often we do equate blessing with favor. In some ways, that is somewhat true, but it's not always true. And so what did you learn about God in the vacancy that you were experiencing while you were constantly exposed to everybody else's blessing?
Well, first I learned that there were a lot of things that I believed about him that weren't true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sound bites I'd heard from sermons, or kind of conceptions that I had from even childhood about what God might be like, that I just kind of carried into my adult life, and they were never verified against scripture. And so when life started to really stall out on the outside, I came to terms with a lot of false thinking that was inside of me about God. And naturally, when you face that, when you take a look and you go, oh my goodness, there's been years of lies I've believed about who he is that I never noticed before, until I actually had the time to recognize something on the inside isn't quite right. Then it just brought me to his word in a new way. And I started to see he's tender.
Hmm.
He's kind. You know, I think of a story in the midst of it, in the midst of our marriage struggles, I was really fighting for God's perspective for my husband, because as we kind of brushed up against each other and our stubbornness rubbed against one another and we just bristled, I started to realize I've got to get a new perspective on my husband if our marriage is going to survive. And as I asked for God's eyes for my husband, I would feel certain responses towards him right after even praying, God, give me your eyes for Nate. And I would almost have this conversation on the inside like, God, you don't really feel that way about him. You don't really feel that kindness and that mercy towards a person, do you? Mm-hmm. But as I started to actually walk it out towards my husband, I realized he's a loving father. He is merciful. He sees us with kind eyes.
Yeah. And I was thinking, and I've known this in my own experience too, Sarah, that if you back up to that part of your story where you were saying that, you know, your heartbreak really drove you to a hunger for him, if you would have gotten what you wanted in all your driving and striving and sort of just got what everybody else got, just as you thought you should get, you'd still believe those lies. But it was your heartbreak that unearthed the lies, isn't it?
That's exactly right. You know, if I had a conversation with my 23-year-old self now, I would say, oh, sister, you have coming what you might think is the hardest ride of your life, and you're going to fall in love with God right in the middle of it. You're going to get what you really wanted but didn't know it was what you wanted, but you're going to get it, just not in the way you expected.
Indeed. Wow. You know, Sarah, that might be your next book. You know, dear younger me.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about this whirlwind season of ministry, engagement, and marriage, and how you started to run and run hard. Talk about that season and kind of how that you really kind of came to a screeching halt at one point.
Well, I was sharing the gospel. It was my heart and my passion to see non-believers come to know Jesus. And there was just a thrill in my heart when I saw their lives changed. I mean, it was a connection with God. God, you're powerful enough to change a life. But over time, I realized that my own story became when God touched my heart when I was 15. It was like that was it. I didn't have ongoing growth and testimony in my life of his power and his goodness. I just kept going back to that one point of conversion as being the best and the greatest moment. You know, it was like this, the cross was this door that I stared at and went, you're beautiful. The wood, it's so big and wow. But I didn't realize it was a door that I could actually walk through and experience even more of him after saying yes to him. And so as I was sharing the gospel, it was like I would find myself seeing lives touched and then realize the thrill that they're experiencing as they open their hearts up to God. I don't know. I knew it years ago, but I don't know it. And I look at the Bible and go, this feels like a history book to me. It reads like a history book, not like true life. And I started to realize there's a disconnect between my outward impact and my internal connection with God. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it was circumstances that brought me to the place of going, okay, I'm ready to shut down shop, turn off the light, and get alone with God and talk to him at unconventional times. And in unconventional ways, I'm going to move out of a 30-minute quiet time with God and invite him in to other parts of my life, because I just can't keep talking about him as the savior of the world and feel so bone dry on the inside.
And you wrote, I had a growing sense that the problem was me. It wasn't that God was the hard driver. It was that I was driving myself and calling it God. We just have a moment here before we take a break. But again, when you got to that place, and it had to have been scary because you're a high producer and you're able to, you know, produce a lot of output, but to slow down and go, I'm so tired that this is not sustainable. How long before God revealed himself to you?
He came quick. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he probably knew the extent of fumes that I was running on and that I couldn't keep going much longer. And it wasn't too long after I prayed that prayer, there's got to be more of you, that I started to see, oh, wait, when I slow down, he will meet me, and
indeed,
he is meeting me.
So good. While you're quiet today, I want to hear from you. Love to have you chime into the conversation, get a copy of this beautiful book in your hands, Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, Tasting the Goodness of God in All Things by Sarah Haggerty, forward by Katie Davis. Some of you know her name, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. We'll be right back. More with Sarah Haggerty in a moment.
Bittersweet, I would say. Even this week, we're in the middle of an adoption process, and there was a hopeful opportunity that did not work out. So it's bittersweet when we're trusting in the Lord and know that He has a perfect plan and timing.
I guess my dad, we hung up our Christmas stockings the other day and we included his, and that was just really sweet to see how we're still going to include that, but at the same time, just the full recognition that this is the first Christmas we're going to have without him.
Watching my daughter as she's growing into a young woman and realizing I've seen great growth in her, but she's not going to be living with us very much longer. I'll be seeing that from a distance.
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Sarah Haggerty about her beautiful book, Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, Tasting the Goodness of God in All Things, and just the essence of this book about in those places of heartbreak and disappointment, there's a hunger there. I just think that's such a great revelation. And in that hunger, when the hunger for God, you will find Him in that place. 877-933-2484. Sue is calling in from Duluth, Minnesota. She's got a question for you, Sarah. Sue, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
I'm just wondering, what would be the best way to minister love and sensitivity to somebody who is having infertility problems?
See, that's such a great question. You know, I would say less answer than more just support. I think sometimes we tend to want to give a roadmap to someone who is walking through pain when really God may have taken him off the map on purpose. And I think that speaks specifically to infertility. Some of the best things that friends did for me were drop off my favorite sweet treat at a random time, or even offer to take my kids for an afternoon so I could just be alone with the Lord. Recognizing that it was hard for me, but not necessarily speaking into that other than just the encouragement from God's word.
Mm.
I think there's also just the unique times that women who struggle with infertility are much more aware of than others, like baby showers, or like a friend who just announced that they're pregnant, or a first birthday party. You know, those things, my friends who could just kind of elbow me, you know, or give me a wink or be aware, I know that this moment is hard for you. It spoke volumes to me. Just their being able to step inside my story a bit and see the different times that might be pain producing for me and just hold my hand, that was awesome.
Mm. Sue, thanks for that sensitivity in the question. You're going to get Sarah's book, which I think is just packed with some insight that you can have to minister to those who battle infertility. What's so interesting about your story, Sarah, is here you have this heartbreak of infertility. And just for the record, we'll get to this, but she's got four adopted kids and a biological son as well. But in that place where, as you say, it almost looked like the blessing of God on those who could just get pregnant without effort, your womb feels empty and is empty. But you're also heartbroken in marriage, worn out from ministry, and then finances are kind of upside down. And I thought it was so interesting how you wrote that at first you and Nate defined yourselves and each other by your output at what you could produce. And isn't that sort of interesting, Sarah, that all those places of production, not just babies, sort of turned up empty for you and put you in a position to find that you're more than what you produce?
Yes, he got my attention. I mean, he had to go. Mm-hmm. He had to do some serious work to get my attention. But yes, every area, exactly.
Mm, wow. And so how would you define yourself and your husband now, or before you defined each other and yourselves by what you produce? How do you define each other now?
You know, I think a lot about what moves the heart of God. And those are words that I even say with a sobriety, because I think they're easier said than lived. But I find myself in a moment, you know, just for example, right after the book came out, you know, and there's a tendency to watch and see how sales are and how the progress of the book is going. I really found myself saying, God, what do you think of me right now? And what are your thoughts towards me as I write this? And as I spill my heart out on paper. And I've found the same thing for my husband and even for my children. You know, their external lives matter to me. They definitely matter to me, but I find myself a lot asking God, what do you think? What do you think about what's going on in them on the inside? And how are they moving your heart by their lives?
Okay, before we get to the adoption, which I can't wait to talk about, there's still a portion of your story that jumped out to me so huge, and it's just so like God. But you tell the story in the book about a friend who gave you a gift, and you were living in a little transitional home, a farmhouse, and you went to buy a home, and it was uncomfortable for you because you said, and forgive me if I'm quoting this wrong, so rephrase it if you need to, but the younger you would have maybe judged somebody like you looking at a home like this, but it was really God giving you a gift that you probably wouldn't even have gotten for yourself. Talk about that internal dialogue and how it sort of wrecked you in a good way to receive what he wanted to give you, even though you didn't want to give this to yourself.
Oh, I had become so good at managing what I received from God, or at least so I thought.
Wow, that's a wow.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it until someone gave me a gift that moved outside of what I thought God would do. And so with this house, here we were faced with this gift of a house. And I knew that I also couldn't tell the story. It was something that we were going to keep confidential. And so as people came through and saw our big house with kind of not an understanding of how we got into this and what was happening in us on the inside, it really developed this conversation with God where I said, what do you think about this? And what are you trying to teach me through this? And I think there's something about those moments where the world can't share them and it's just between you and the Lord, where your heart really gets to receive his plan and his purpose. And crazy enough, oftentimes his plan and his purpose is very different than what our natural eye might assess as a plan and a purpose for our life.
And isn't it something, Sarah, how, you know, the well-meaning you, the younger you would have said, no, I'm not having a house like that. But the God story is writing. He's like, no, you're going to need a house because you're going to have five kids.
Exactly.
And I just
love
that.
You're going to have five kids who also come from a poverty mentality, and they're going to have a really hard time receiving good gifts from you. So let me teach you about your heart. Your heart is going to have a really hard time receiving good gifts from me. So I'm going to walk you through this first, and a few years later, you're going to be walking them through a very similar thing.
Well, you can't impart what you don't possess. And so if you manage how you receive, imagine how you would parent how they receive, you know?
Exactly. And you know, it's been a multi-year journey for me to see that I carry an orphan spirit in my own heart. I have parents who loved me and showed up to every one of my sporting events and were totally invested in my life. And yet something on the inside, I still approach God as if I was an orphan. And so all of these stories that I walked through in my own life, I've been able to walk through them again with my kids, maybe just to relearn them and see them all over again. What they're facing, having been physically orphaned, is not all that different from what I've wrestled with, even not having been physically orphaned.
And yet God was just so hopelessly in love with you that he's wooed you along, and he's just unearthed your story in the most beautiful way. And Sarah, you could have camped at any of those places of heartbreak and disappointment. You could have walked away from your husband during the worst time of his business downturn. And you know, and I know how love does this, where it unearths some of our hurts. And you were talking about even just the mess you felt. I mean, all of these turns, other people do walk away because it's too messy to face. In fact, I love that you said, I knew I didn't deserve this. I didn't feel I could be trusted with it, but God wasn't sitting back fearful that I would suddenly cash in on this gift as a lifestyle. This scenario wasn't setting me up for materialism. It was deconstructing my misconception of him as a tight-fisted father, someone who's concerned only with my getting life right. And you talked about how he's moved in that place of mess, and really it stopped being a curse. It started to be a story for you. I mean, he really has loved you and wooed you along, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. It's fun to hear somebody else say, I mean, to hear it in your words, yes, he has.
So great. So talk about how these adoptions came about, and just talk about that part of the story.
Well, our first adoptions, shortly after we kind of got our arms around my diagnosis and what that might mean for us, we considered some natural or some typical routes that people take for fertility treatment, but we had it in our hearts to adopt before then. We lived with a family for a summer who had two children that they had adopted and three biological children, and just watching their lives, we kind of were having these, you know, before bed conversations like, goodness, we think we might be here so that we could get a vision for adoption. We could see ourselves doing this. We just thought we would do it after we had biological children. So when we realized that I would really struggle conceiving, it wasn't a long decision process for us. We really felt like, you know what, this is really an opportunity for us to pursue adoption. And so we adopted our first two from Ethiopia, and the process itself was very challenging. I mean, it was one of the many things in that season of delay and waiting and pain. We thought it would be 8 months, and it was almost 2 years later when we brought them home.
Wow. And talk about even the bonding time and what that was like for your heart.
Well, our first two adoptions, it was actually really smooth. The process itself was painful and long and arduous, but once we brought them into our fold, the bonding, it felt like it took months, whereas our most recent adoptions from Uganda were a little bit more challenging on that front. And I think part of the reason why maybe it felt so easy is the Lord left us open for adopting again shortly thereafter. I think had it been hard, we might have been a little more slow to jump on our next adoption.
And so how much time passed between your first two adoptions and then your next two?
2 years. So in a period of 2 years, we went from zero to four children.
Whoa.
It was crazy. And we were silly. I mean, we were stupid. And I think God uses that. God used us being naive in jumping into it. And he covered over a lot of us, you know, a lot of our quick assumptions about adoption. We just didn't really know all that we were getting into until after we'd said yes.
And how long has it been since you first adopted these kids? How long have you been a family?
We have been a family for 5 years, 5.5 years.
Wow. And tell me how it's going and how they're adjusting.
You know, it's been beautiful. And I think the part that feels the most beautiful to me right now, like today, is that this adoption has been the avenue God has used to reach my heart. And I didn't realize it when I thought what we were saying yes to was rescuing children. You know, our second adoption, we had adopted our first two from Ethiopia. And while we were there, we got a tour of the orphanage. And while we were touring the orphanage, there was this girl, maybe 9 or 10, who was showing us around. And it was clear that she had done this many times. She walked around the orphanage, showed the families what life was like for their babies, but she knew she wasn't going anywhere, that the orphanage was her forever home. And she looked at me with these eyes as she gave us this tour that said, take me home. And so I left Ethiopia with our first two children, and I said to my husband, we have to go back. There are older children who don't have families that are waiting, and we have space. And so when we went and pursued our second two children who were older, who were 5 and 7, I still had rescue in mind. I was doing this to rescue, to bring them into a family. And I had no idea that God was going, and I'm going to use these children to crack you open and rescue your heart. And I'm going to reveal to you parts of your heart that are orphaned and broken and not attached to me as father as you parent these children. And I think that's been the most beautiful part for me, is that he's done a dual work in me getting to watch my children get healed and made whole and fall in love with God, and then secretly going, yeah, Lord, this may have just all been about you and me.
What a beautiful story. I'm overwhelmed by it, Sarah. And when we come back, I'd love for you to tell the story of Boaz and how he came to be. What an amazing story. Talking to Sarah Haggerty, the title of her book is Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, Tasting the Goodness of God in All Things. Last chance to call in and ask Sarah a question or chime in, 877-933-2484, or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. We'll be right back.
We have circles of prayer for missionaries every month. We meet. We have a missionary speaker, and we have lunch together, and we pray together. And on Monday, everything that could go wrong went wrong. But it turned out good because, first of all, the room was not set up. Secondly, the speaker didn't show up. Third, the video that we had planned to use did not work. And the cook could not make our lunch because they had a funeral for 300 people and a staff party. So we ordered sandwiches from Jimmy John's and broke into two groups after the people left for the, half of them left for the funeral. And they prayed together. And I got these really warm, precious notes from people saying it was a delightful morning. because they had more time to pray specifically for the missionaries of that day. So it was a bittersweet moment, and I'm really happy that the Lord organized it that way. Out of chaos, He brought really good things.
Mm. He is present in the company of the righteous, and that's my friend Meredith Andrews singing. He's come for us. He has come for us to save us and to free us and to make us whole again. And talking to Sarah Haggerty of Love, this girl, I love this story, title of her book is Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, Tasting the Goodness of God. And before the break, Sarah, we were talking about your battle with infertility, finding God in some of those desperate places of heartbreak and disappointment. And then you brought us up to speed that you'd adopted four precious children. And then there's Boaz. Tell us about Boaz.
Oh, he was the surprise of our lives. We had been married for 12 years when we, I think we had been married when we found out, 12 years, maybe 11 into 12 years, when we found out that I had conceived Bo. And it was, you know, we were still at that awkward nexus of hope and believing that God could open my womb while also wanting to hold to Him as sovereign, knowing that He may choose not to. Despite my growing age and our family getting older, in the morning that I found out, when I told my husband, he said to me, and this was not, he was not giving a theological doctrine. It was just kind of this heart guttural response. And he said, Sarah, do you think the favor of God has lifted from our lives? We had found so much internal fruit in the season of waiting for a biological child, and all of the external, the struggles through our marriage. My father actually had cancer and had died, and that struggles with his work. We had found so much internal fruit in finding God in the hidden places and in the places where we least expected Him, that it almost felt like that was the favor of God. And it was the favor of God, but you know, our world so oftentimes labels favor as external fruit and external success.
Hmm. How did you answer that, Sarah? I mean, I totally get what he's saying. When you walk through the valley of the shadow and you start to find those treasures in those dark and secret places, it is almost a private, intimate walk with God. So to come out of the shadows and then get your heart's desire, it's almost a scary thing. So I get that. So how did you respond?
It was, you know, not so much my response to Nate in that moment, because I was feeling very much the same way he was, but it has been a different journey to walk out not having infertility be a piece of our story. You know, it was such a part of shaping me that it was almost as if when that season of time was over, God was saying, now there's another side of me to explore. And I want you to find me here when I give you the desire of your heart and the thing that you've been asking for. So if anything, it's opened me up to see, gosh, we have a lifetime to explore this God. And every season provides us with a new angle of Him. He is not a two-dimensional God for us to place a check mark next to once we've figured Him out.
Indeed. Every season provides a new angle to experience Him. That's tweetable right there. That is so good. And do the doctors know, Sarah, what happened as to why you conceived and got pregnant and was able to deliver a healthy baby?
Well, I found a wonderful doctor, a wonderful naturopathic doctor who helped walk me through some very simple diet changes. And crazy enough, after a long period of time, those small changes were what seemed to be, what seemed to lead to us being able to conceive. But who knows? You know, I feel like the mystery of God just kind of rests on that. You know, we have a little bit of clarity, but His timing, you know, He knew the exact time that baby Bo needed to enter our story to have me pursue Him in a new way.
Did you deal with any kind of fear during that pregnancy, since that was a first pregnancy after a long time of trying? Or what was your, where was your heart and your, you know, your sense of emotion at it that during that time?
You know, interestingly enough, I did not. Not that I didn't have a few random moments of fear, but it felt to me like such an exclamation point at the end of a very long and hard season that I didn't really struggle with fear about the pregnancy not coming to full term.
Hmm.
Now, I actually have recently walked through a miscarriage, and so I'm in kind of a new phase of facing something I had never before, because I have not miscarried before. And now that I know what it's like to carry and to birth a biological child, it's a whole different conversation with God, experiencing loss on this end and seeing, oh, Father, you have so much to talk to us about as we walk through new levels and new angles of pain.
Hmm. You know, what do you say, Sarah, to that person listening who's right in the midst of heartbreak and disappointment? And I get it. I want them to read your book because just the context you give, that when you're surrounded by people who have what you want and you don't yet, and how it is just heartbreaking. But like, as you say, there's so much more of God to experience in that place, but it really is an invitation. And I'm setting this up too big here. I'm going to think of a more simple way to say it. But what word of encouragement do you have on this side of some of those battles that you've experienced in God, where had you just gotten your way, what you might have missed of him?
I would say, you know, this is your golden hour. Mm-hmm. This is your sweet opportunity to fall in love with God. And if we were all really honest, the deepest cry of our heart for our lives on this earth is to fall in love with a God who is crazy in love with us. And so I would say, don't waste this moment wishing that it would be over. And I don't think that's a callous statement. I think it's very true that the world will allure you to wish this moment is over when it might be full of treasure from God that would change you forever. So I would say sit in this moment as long as you need to find his love for you and to fall in love with him.
So good. You wrote, God was bringing a glory out of this barrenness and a greater hunger for him out of our longing. Listen to this, okay? This new desire for an old concept, impact, came not from pressing or forcing, as we once had, but from receiving. He whispered in the dark when no one else was looking, and we were there, hidden, to hear him. And I want to say that again, because I don't want to rush past this too quickly, because it's a profound insight. Hear it again. God is bringing a glory out of this barrenness and a greater hunger for him out of our longing. This new desire for an old concept, impact, came not from pressing or forcing, as we once had, but from receiving. He whispered in the dark when no one else was looking, and we were there, hidden, to hear him. And it's such a profound insight, Sarah, because when if we're not getting what we want, you see it in Scripture, where manipulate situations to get a counterfeit, and that always falls woefully short. So we can either take matters into our own hands, which for believers is catastrophic, because we can't create our best. God only can do that. Or we can be hidden in that place where we're positioned to hear from him. And so maybe talk to that person. We just have a moment before I ask you to pray, who's maybe tempted, tired of waiting, and tempted to take matters into their own hands, that they could be positioned to hear him. And it comes from receiving, not from striving and doing.
Yeah, I would say that this is the time to talk to God about the places in your heart where you have been slow to receive his love. And that this really is, it isn't that this is a, you haven't been sidetracked. It's not a back alley. This is a beautifully purposed time where you get to understand parts of your heart that you've never understood before, and you get to see him in light of that. And there is a sweetness to being hidden in the Lord that the earth can never, the world could never fully understand or comprehend. But he knows, and he's purposed our lives for that kind of hidden conversation with him.
This has just been a treasured conversation, Sarah, and I'm grateful to have met you. I really do pray that God would continue to use you in ways that boggle your mind. And as we get ready to wrap up, I know women that I want to get this book for who are heartbroken, and I'm sure we have plenty of men listening too whose hearts are broken. Would you just pray for that brokenhearted person who's yet to find him in that dark place?
I would love to. Lord, I pray for the person who is walking through this Advent season in loss. And I pray, God, that as they go, you would tenderly yet powerfully touch their hearts, even today, God. I pray, Lord, for the one who's about ready to give up, God, that you would enter into their day and whisper to them about your goodness and your love in the land of the living. Father, I pray that you would infuse hope in the lost and in the broken, that this moment could be glorious in you, God.
In Jesus' name, amen. Dear Sarah, thanks for joining us. I pray that you'll come back and we can pick up this conversation where we left off.
Thanks so much for having me.
Your dear sister, Lord bless you.
Thank you.
so glad you tuned in today. I hope you found some encouragement here. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Do me a favor, be a radio missionary, because surely you know some friends and family who need some encouragement today. First hour was about being addicted to busy, finding that place of rest. Second hour, finding God in those places of heartbreak and disappointment. By a click of a button, you can send it out by Facebook, email, or Twitter. I'll leave you with this thought. You hear it practically every day. The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He is the one. He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Meet you back here next time.